You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to The Midside, where we bring you the only podcast consistently about the culture surrounding the disposal of our bodily waste. Actually, there's no way that's true. In today's day and age, there's got to be at least one plumbing podcast out there. And if the host doesn't call himself Zeke the Plumber, I'm very disappointed in him. Joining me this week via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, could you please corroborate that I am not part, or I was not part of the group of fans that was suing the NFL over their pain and suffering to get the Patriots draft pick back?
I can neither confirm nor deny, because I have not seen evidence either way. So you are guilty until proven innocent, sir. Although that lawsuit was thrown out, like, today by a judge who was like, fuck you, I'm a Jets fan.
Well, it was a New York judge, right? So that's probably why.
Yeah. So he was like, hey, get out of here. That's my New York accent. This sounds is why I'm an actor.
Like, yeah, it sounds vaguely like Andy Bernstein, vaguely. Speaking of which, did you see that somebody posted a question to him on Facebook that asked why Howard Roark wasn't a minor character in Atlas Shrugged?
Like a shared universe between the two?
Exactly what I thought, Elliot. I was like, shared universes have gone too far! Too far!
So Anthem is just the world of Atlas Shrugged really far in the future?
Correct. Let's make this happen. Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, you've already heard him, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, you recently spent some time with a Midsider. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Our beloved William Green is here in Orlando. He's actually going to be here for until, I think, Friday. And he's here with his friends, Matt and Lily. I promised Lily that I would give her a shout out. So hi, Lily. Hi, Matt.
You know, I've been avoiding doing that and you just completely like undermined me.
Whatever. I'm just going to do it because I promised her. So yeah, it's been cool. He's talking about SpaceX and, being all, you know, cool and awesome the way William does. So, you know, we were having a good time. We took him to Magic Kingdom on Saturday and, pretty awesome time. His friends Matt and Lily had never been there. This was their first time. So they got ears, little Mickey ears and everything. And man, we just had a blast.
Are you supposed to get Mickey ears on your first time?
Well, yeah, you know, it's your first ears. You know, it's kind of a thing.
My parents deprived me of that.
By the way, before we get into this podcast, I have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
It's a Kirsten Powers interview where Donald Trump describes himself as an Ayn Rand fan.
No!
Oh, I have to read this to you.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Yes, he did. He went on about it.
You don't go full retard, Donald Trump.
Hey. I'll beat you. Okay.
I'm not saying being an Ayn Rand fan makes you a retard. I'm saying Donald Trump saying he's an Ayn Rand fan is full retard.
Oh, I see. Oh, I get it. Okay, that's funnier. He said of her novel, The Fountainhead, quote, "It relates to business and beauty and life and inner emotions." That book relates to...
He read
to,
that somewhere, did he?
That book relates to ... everything.
Okay, at least he said that. I'm glad. Okay, that is a good soundbite. I have to give him that.
He identified with Howard Roark, the novel's idealistic protagonist who designs skyscrapers and rages against the establishment. That's Kirsten Powers being an idiot. When I pointed out that The Fountainhead is in a way about the tyranny of groupthink, Trump sat up and said, "That's what is happening here." He then recounted a call he received from a liberal journalist. "How does it feel to have done what you have done?" "I said, what I have I done?" And said, "Nobody in history of this country has done what you have done." What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I can't read anything that Trump says. And I said, "Well, if I lose, then no big deal." And he said, no, if you lose, it doesn't matter because this will be talked about forever. And I said, "It will be talked about more if I win."
Well, yes, obviously. I mean, obvious things for 200, please, Alex. Like...
Okay. Like, I can have a serious debate about Donald Trump's policies, but ironically, I can't have a serious debate about Donald Trump as a human being.
Well, that's, I mean, that's ultimately...
This is ridiculous.
But that's ultimately, unfortunately, the crossroads we're all at with evaluating Donald Trump, right? You know, nobody talks about his policies because they talk about him as a human being, and it's very hard to... I don't know if it's necessarily being objective, just talking about his policies, but nobody really talks about his policies. There's not a debate about that, because they can't look past the human being.
If instead of Donald Trump... The people supporting him just ran a dot matrix printer that printed out a list of policies that were all Trump-esque. I would take that more seriously than Donald Trump.
Cause here's the issue, right? His popularity has nothing to do with his policies. People are voting for him because of the person. They want an asshole in the White House. That's really what it comes down to. His supporters just want someone who's going to be a dick to world leaders because they think that America's pride and dignity is somehow correlated with a commander-in-chief's ability to be a dick to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder how the vote will swing now that he is an Ayn Rand fan.
Well, and, I just think this is hilarious because I just posted that call that Midsider Katrina did with Stefan Molyneux, where they talked about why do objectivists hate Donald Trump. It's a good thing they had that discussion last week, because now we have a reason that they're going to rally around.
Just know Jonathan Honig right now is banging his head against the wall. Like, why? Why?
He's not flying away with his ears.
No, he's not.
Oh, so low blow, shorty. Yeah,
I love Jonathan Honig. He's one of the greatest people I've ever met. He's awesome.
And he listens to the podcast every once in a while. So hi, John.
Yeah. Hi, Jonathan. It's all for
awkward
show. No, he's cool. I met him on the set of the Atlas Shrugged movie. He's awesome.
Yeah. Cool peoples.
All right. Let's move on to things that aren't awesome though, such as the federal government giving more money to things that are useless. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up.
Researchers at the University of Michigan are about to make it rain with their new $500,000.
Oh, I thought it was all the tears of women that were going to make it rain.
No, they're going to make it rain because they're going to have a lot of singles to play with here. Mm-hmm.
Is that a pun?
Maybe.
Because the women have to be single if they're worried about microaggressions?
You have to explain my jokes. They're not as funny. The University of Michigan is conducting a study on male engineering students to determine whether their unconscious biases, i.e. microaggressions, are driving women out of the field. Yes, this is a $500,000 study that you, the taxpayer, have funded. According to the Reason article, men are more likely than women to go into engineering, and research wants to know if sexism plays a role in that. The study involves male engineering students being recorded while they interact with their female counterparts, which clearly will not make that interaction more awkward.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, isn't if they're just recording men, male engineering students interacting with women, isn't it just going to be, like, silence and, like, feet shuffling and, like, hands, like, you know?
Yeah. Can you do the thing over there?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Could you just say over there?
I don't understand what you're saying. I couldn't say anything over there. Fuck this, I'm leaving engineering. That's how all of these things go, I'm assuming. Researchers will then watch the tapes and make a note of any microaggressions. I want to read you just the first couple sentences here of the abstract. The goal of study one is to identify the specific types of microaggressions, e.g. ignoring women's contributions or assigning women to less important tasks, occurring in videotaped laboratory-based engineering teams. Researchers will develop a reliable microaggressions assessment procedure, or an RAMP, and will analyze effects on engineering outcomes.
That's almost as good as asshole.
and persistence. REMAP. Reliable microaggressions assessment procedure. So what do you think about this? Is this going to finally tell us why there are fewer women in engineering?
They actually just did an episode of Girl Meets World about this, where they had to do an experiment, and there were two tasks to do, and one of the tasks was basically nothing, and every partner was a man and a woman, every pair, and they all had the woman do nothing. And, of course, the hero of the show, the heroine of the show, Riley Matthews, was the first to ever figure out that men always had the women not do anything, and women just accepted it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's incredibly contrived.
Have you seen the early seasons of Boy Meets World?
I try to forget them, interestingly. So there are so many things wrong with this, not the least of which is that how can they tell something is actually a microaggression? So isn't this necessarily subjective? What one person feels is an aggression, another person might be totally fine with?
Well, right. This goes back to what I always say about just romantic, right? Hitting on someone, showing interest in someone. We have this idea that we've been taught from feminism that if you're asserting your interest in a woman, that that's necessarily an attack on her if she doesn't give you permission beforehand. But some women you approach and you compliment and you know what they do? They say, thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm flattered. Others
what?
Get mad. Because you know who it depends on? The individual woman.
Yeah, that's not what I've been taught. I taught you basically or metaphorically raping her by looking at her in a way that she didn't immediately approve of. So,
look, this is all why whenever I go to the bathroom in a unisex stall or if I go in the woman's room because I have every right to go in whatever room I want because I'm a man, I leave the toilet seat up.
Aggressed. You. Triggered.
I hope when you look down, you go, there's been a man in here.
Is that because you just have this strong masculine odor that emanates from your pits?
Yeah, it's called Old Spice.
Funny that Old Spice is
your
simultaneously...
Your toilet is now a microaggression.
Funny that Old Spice is simultaneously like the modern millennial deodorant and also the thing your great-grandfather used to wear. And basically nothing in between there.
All old things become new again, Daniel. Eventually.
Yes.
So I have a question about all of this. You know, let's sidestep the fact that, you know, this wasn't in any budget and they're just giving money to people. Like, we wonder why we're, you know, in debt and have a deficit. But let's forget about that. And I have a question. Why don't we worry about macroaggressions first? Like, isn't okay. There a lot of, like, people killing each other and shit going on in the world?
Isn't there some particular group that, when offended, tends to blow themselves up? Like, aren't there things like that happening? Like, one group of people who don't like to shave and also hate women and cut off their clitorises, who, when someone draws a picture of someone important to them, they tend to yell things in the air and then blow their shit up at world capitals.
That seems pretty macro-aggressive
right now. Let's not talk about the Amish.
I mean, I don't want to speak badly of all of the Amish, but I think we know who we're talking about here. So, the other thing is, this is the Adam Carolla argument, right, which we bring up consistently. Where is the $500,000 to study why there aren't more Jewish roofers? Where is the $500,000 study to determine why more women aren't dying on the job than men? Because most, like, it's some astronomical percentage. In the 90s, a percent of job-related deaths are men. Well, where's the study to see why more women aren't dying at work? Why can't we do that study? Because if we want full equality,
it's because they're not working.
Some of you bitches are going to have to die.
It's because too many men are taking care of them. They get to sit at home.
I'm not going to go that far. But
I am.
I'm saying we're going to need some matricide here. That's all I'm saying.
How about the fact that this is a study done by the University of Michigan?
No one cares about the University of Michigan.
Yeah, well, first of all, the University of Michigan gave us Tom Brady, so you take that back.
And it's been all downhill from there.
That's true. And second of all, the fact I'm pointing out is not that it's just Michigan, it's just that it's academia. You don't see, like, feds give $500,000 to Google to watch for male programmers committing microaggressions.
Programmer?
Cool hack, bro. Fist bump. I've never heard the term programmers. Is that a thing?
Yes.
Is it really a thing? Oh, God. I'm texting William right now. I'm going to be like, William, are you a programmer?
Speaking of ridiculous things on campus, this might be my favorite story of the year so far. This was
this
a story.
This is an early front runner for farcical story of the year.
Yes. Yes. Fox News reports, campus panic as college students mistake priest for a KKK member. Yes, some Indiana University students got a little nervous and rushed to warn others after thinking that a priest was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. The Tab in Bloomington reported the priest was spotted at a Red Mango Monday night. For any of you wonder what the fuck a Red Mango is, it's one of those frozen yogurt places.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they always have weird names like Blue like Monkey. And then I'm like, am I playing Legends of the Hidden Temple? What's going on?
Yeah, just call it yogurt and shit. Then I'll know to go in or to avoid it.
Yeah, like Yogurtland? That is a well-named place. I know what I'm getting when I'm going there.
So we will post a picture of the priest who is very fucking clearly a priest.
Thanks for the homework, Daniel. Because what Daniel really means is Justin will post a picture of the priest.
Yeah, this is your thing. So he's a Dominican friar, which means he wears a sort of white garb with a rope belt, and he carries a rosary.
Oh, so he doesn't commit genocide against people from the Dominican Republic?
No, not often. So it started with a tweet by at baby YNINI, which I'm assuming is baby Ynini. Who tweeted, IU students be careful, there's someone walking around in KKK gear with a whip. They assumed the rosary was a whip.
It's getting all roots up in here.
So then another account whose name has been blacked out says, at
hey,
IU
hey,
Bloomington.
Hey, hey, his name has been erased or covered up.
I'm sorry. His name has been African-Americaned out. There's a man walking around campus in a KKK hood carrying a whip, and there's nothing you can do to make students feel safe. They tweeted that at the university.
That's what they said.
Yes. And then one of the residence assistants notified his residents telling them that they should stay inside and please be careful.
Okay. So I have two things about this one. So the first is just a more pragmatic thing. And the second thing is a more abstract thing that I don't think we've talked about specifically with these stories. The first thing I have is, even if there's one KKK guy walking around your campus, so even if this were true, what kind of damage could he do? I mean, we're not talking about like the Bruce Willis of the KKK where no matter you try to kill him, he's going to keep coming, right?
He's not the Mike Myers of the KKK.
Right.
He doesn't have the white mask on under the white hood.
Right. My point is, what's he going to do if there's one of him?
Well, he could burn a capital T on your lawn.
Wouldn't it be more fruitful if you really thought he was a threat to be like, hey, everyone, there's a KKK guy out on the lawn. Let's all go kill him.
Okay. Talking about not giving people ideas, this would be one of those things.
So, let me break in here. William just texted me back. I asked him, does he consider himself a programmer? He says that a programmer is basically a jock geek and they are reviled by feminists, because it's wrong to be social / manly and program. You're supposed to be socially awkward and not talk to women.
Right. So basically like it's, if Zack Snyder were a programmer, it's the same, a lot of the same reason they hate him.
Yes, thank you, William.
Awesome.
So my second point is, we never really address the idea that they say the tweet said, how can you make people feel safe, right?
Yes, right.
The idea that they can make you feel something?
Yeah, and what does it mean? What does that mean? What exactly do you need in order to feel safe?
But that's even concretizing it. My point is it doesn't matter the number of concrete things you do. Only you can make, you can't even make yourself feel something. Emotions don't work that way. Even if you're like, ice cream would make you feel safe, even if they give you ice cream, there's no guarantee you're going to feel safe. It's a standard that can't be reached. There's no way of psychologically achieving that.
I mean, especially, I guess if you could do something like, oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, allow concealed carry for legal gun owners on campus. I mean, that may contribute to an environment where people could feel safe, but, you know, I mean, that's just irrational to the university system.
It's true. I think my favorite – those are all good points. I think my favorite response to this is actually the Dominican Friars Twitter account, by the way, got in the game here and tweeted at the TAB and Hoosier Catholic and the university, to avoid confusion in the future. And then there was a bunch of comparison pictures. On the left, Dominican Friars. On the right, Ku Klux Klan member. On the left, Dominican Friar. On the right, pro boxer. And it's a white robe.
Yeah.
On the left, Dominican Friar. On the right, man at the spa.
Well, that's, I think, probably the most disturbing point that we haven't even acknowledged yet. These are people who are in college and they don't know the difference between someone in religious garb and someone in KKK garb. And nobody out there gets smart and say they're both just different type of religions. You know the point I'm making.
Also, the final one was Dominican Friar on the left and child on Halloween on the right, dressed up as a ghost. Anyway, so... It's shocking what kids in college don't know. I think I made this point last week that every generation thinks that their college students are the stupid generation, but seriously, ours are.
No, this isn't us anymore.
Borderline retarded.
This is younger than us. I'm not claiming these fucking people. We're the last great generation. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. We are the height of American culture right here in the Midside.
Oh, God. God, heaven help us if we're the ones who are going to save things. But the other day, for instance, a post went viral because on some Democratic page, it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the Democratic Party, tweeted out like, what is your favorite Democratic policy in history or something like that? And someone snarkily tweeted back, oh, I really love that time FDR put the Japanese in internment camps. Which is snarky, but funny. And then people started attacking them like, this is a myth. Stop perpetuating this myth.
This is a
libertarian lie.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
No. No, it's not. Please, go open any history book. Please.
Or how about talk to Japanese people? Is it the same argument people use about the Holocaust when Holocaust deniers?
Yeah. Internment deniers. I cannot believe it.
Like, that didn't happen that long ago.
Pretty soon, FDR will have been walking upright.
I know. Towered over everyone. Morally and physically. You know who does tower over everyone, though, is anyone who plays for the Caucasians. Yes. This is a new team, at least from a shirt by Bomani Jones when he was on ESPN. It is actually the Indians logo, I think.
Yes, Cleveland Indians logo.
But redone as the Caucasians with a blonde-haired guy with a money sign sticking out of his head where the feather should be. Bomani Jones, who is someone I don't know. Who's Bomani Jones?
I have no idea who he is.
I know.
But is the picture depict John Galt? Is that what I just heard?
A white guy with a dollar sign over his head?
Yeah, it sounds like John Galt to me.
So apparently Bomani Jones is the co-host of ESPN's Mike and Mike, or he's a replacement host on ESPN's Mike and Mike. And plays
so they replaced
Mike Golic.
Okay. They didn't replace the Jew with the black guy. All right.
And he was wearing a Caucasian shirt, apparently to point out, you know, how bad it is to stereotype races for the sake of sports teams. And it has caused some backlash on Twitter, or people are calling him out. At Jimmy Knows said, I don't blame Bomani for being a disgrace. I blame ESPN for allowing it. At Bomani Jones, who hurt you? I'm serious. I don't want people in pain. And then a couple other people were tweeting that they really loved his shirt. They wish they could get some. Apparently it was some Canadian thing. But so what do you think about this? Caucasians, did he make a poignant point that we need to stop stereotyping and get rid of all these Native American team names?
No. In fact, I think somebody should now institute a franchise named Caucasians.
Yeah, maybe Dan Snyder, owner of the Washington Redskins, could just go full reverse and just call them the Washington Palefaces.
Hey, man, I would wear that shirt unironically. I would cheer for a team called the Caucasians. And second of all, this goes back to what we were just saying about the whole, you know, education in this country and the knowledge of college kids. This was something that when I was in college, people pulled for their intramural teams. They would name their intramural teams the Whiteys or the Crackers or something. So this isn't even like, I mean, this is like a juvenile prank.
How fast would social justice warriors turn if there was a legit team named the Whites or the Caucasians and people started genuinely rooting for them? How fast would they say that is an evil, Eurocentric, patriarchal, you know, horrible, oppressive name that needs to be shut down immediately?
I agree 100% with what you're saying. So I actually think building off of that, he could have made a better point if his shirt said, like, the African Americans or the Blacks. Because it would be a black guy wearing that. So it's like, yeah, I'm not a mascot. Look at what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Other thing here, and this is something I've pointed out since high school, are there not already Caucasian mascots that are stereotypes?
The Patriots.
How about the Patriots, the Fighting Irish?
Yeah, dude, the fucking Fighting Irish, I don't know why they're not more angry. Like, well, okay, I mean, I don't know how you make the Fighting Irish more angry. But... I guess I should, as an Italian, I probably should have provoked the Irish, but...
Well, the Padres, the Buccaneers, the Vikings, the Titans, like, the list goes on and on. When I was in high school, we had the Cornhuskers, which is basically a white guy who all he did was shuck corn all day.
Yeah, that's Nebraska, the Cornhuskers.
Yeah. Oh, I guess they are a college team as well. But, yeah. So, there are white, like, who cares?
Yeah, we're
like,
just more diversified. Tradition thing. Fine. Well, I mean, what can we make them? The rain dancers? Will that make them happier?
Somehow, Justin, I don't think it will. I don't think the solution to the racial sensitivity problem is to pick a different stereotype.
I'm not. It's what they do. They do rain dances. Am I wrong?
And if we did have a black team, it'd be like the Harlem Well Hung.
No, the Globetrotters.
You didn't get my joke. Okay.
No, I got the joke. I was just sidestepping it because that is a harmful stereotype to short white people. Some of us also have big penises, okay?
Yeah, just not you. Right. Okay.
Let the internet decide that.
No dick pics on the internet, please. 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 Thank you. Whatever happened to our segment called the dick pic? Do you remember that segment?
Yeah, I do. It fell by the wayside because I get no feedback and then I get bored. So I'm just like, fuck it.
What did Dick stand for? Daily Internet Comment?
Yeah, something like that. But I didn't want to. I'm done with commenting.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not. I'll give it to tomorrow. Back onto the Reddits.
I'm kind of on the DTs already.
Speaking of detoxing, I have no idea. I'm going to link these two things. You're going to need to detox.
The climate is addicted to oil.
Government, after you hear this story. There you go. CEI, which is a libertarian think tank in Washington, D.C., was subpoenaed this week over its stance on climate change. That is not a joke, ladies and gentlemen. That is something that really happened. In reading from their press release, the Competitive Enterprise Institute today denounced a subpoena from Attorney General Claude E. Walker of the U.S. Virgin Islands that attempted to unearth a decade of the organization's materials and work on climate change policy. This is the latest effort in an intimidation campaign to criminalize speech and research on the climate debate led by New York Attorney Generals Eric Schneiderman and former Vice President Al Gore. The subpoena requests a decade's worth of communications, emails, statements, drafts, and other documents regarding CEI's work on climate change and energy policy, including private donor information. It demands that CEI produce these materials from 20 years ago, from 1997 to 2007, by April 30th of 2016.
So, out of all the stories you've read today, this is the one that makes the least sense to me. It's the most nonsensical. I don't understand anything you just said. The attorneys from the U.S. Virgin Islands?
Yeah. It's kind of funny, but it makes a bit of sense for a few reasons. One is because the attorneys from the VI can act as sort of a test case without there being too much connection. We can sort of, if it fails, you can sort of be like, oh, that's just some rogue attorney general. But also logistically very inconvenient to fight. Very inconvenient for everyone to fly down to the Virgin Islands for court cases.
Oh no, it's so inconvenient. Hey guys, I gotta go to the Virgin Islands this weekend for a court case.
It's not inconvenient in the sense that it would be pleasant. It is inconvenient in the sense that it takes time and a lot of money. You have to understand, this is a non-profit think tank. They're not rolling in it. Like, this is something that is gonna cost them a lot of money to fight. So, but do you know why they're doing this? Like, do you know what the impetus of this is? We covered this story, I think, a while back where New York attorney generals are considering suing, like, ExxonMobil for their stance on climate change. Well, now they've decided they're going to go after anyone ExxonMobil gave money to, or any organizations like Shell or BP.
Any Shell organizations?
No, I mean.
Any Shell companies?
Like, those organizations that were given money by oil companies for initiatives like climate change research and whatever, and say this is basically a big tobacco cover-up kind of thing. Like that the oil companies were doing this mass misinformation campaign and they thus hurt people and the planet and the polar bears, and thus the planet deserves to be given money.
So they're trying to do what they did with secondhand smoke, where they made it seem like it was inarguable science.
Yes. Yes, there can be no legitimate scientific argument against this, is what they're saying. This is more nefarious and more ambiguous than secondhand smoke, because point to a single human being who's been injured by global warming. So one, you can't do that. And two, even if you could do that, point directly the connection between ExxonMobil per se and global warming.
Well, couldn't you argue that skin cancer from sunburns is caused by global warming?
Al Gore wakes up every day and finds a new thing that has been caused by global warming. My penis couldn't get hard last night. Must be global warming. Like, every single day, there's a new thing that is caused by global warming.
Okay, well, I can cause harm, then. I can find harm that's been caused by global warming. So things Al Gore finds or creates are responsible for, are global warming is responsible for, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, global warming caused the internet, which has destroyed our culture.
Dun dun dun. We found the connection, folks. We have.
Are you doing a David Letterman top 10 list kind of thing, Justin? Things
that you mean I'm saying unfunny things that are reasonably connected? Thank you for bailing me out there.
Every week. This is ridiculous on its face. You have lawsuits over non-existent plaintiffs, over non-existent crimes, because people disagree with you. And you want to use this as a way to gain control over them. I don't care what side of the ideological spectrum you're on. I don't care if you believe that global warming is happening and that mankind is the number one contributor to it. This should frighten the fuck out of you. Because next term could be President Trump using this exact same power because you disagree with the Mexican wall. Is that not insane? Do you not think that that is an overreach of government?
Or even somebody like Ted Cruz, you know, who, if he's not a fan of abortion, for example, or abortion rights, well, there you go. He can sue you and arrest you because you disagree with him.
Exactly. I mean, I'm going to sue the National Organization for Women because of their cover up in the complicity. Some word. Thank you. That. In relation to harm done by abortions and their cover up of the science. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what side you're on. This could be used against you, your favorite organizations or ideologies that you support. And it is completely, completely outside the realm of proper government.
Yeah,
regardless
and I mean,
of the side you're on.
On top of that, this is where they get you rhetorically, right? People on the left, listen up here, people on the left, where they tell you, well, the only way to get our point across is to do these things. When really they're just doing it as a power grab. Climate change can be argued for and it can be supported by libertarians. If you
it
really
is supported by libertarians.
Right, I understand that. I'm talking abstractly.
Okay.
So yes, it is supported by libertarians. And well, they're not supporting climate change like, yay, destroy the climate. But
by the way, when I was a kid and I first heard about cancer drives to raise money for cancer. Like, I wrote up a sign that said, hooray cancer, let's support it, and started marching around our town with it, and was quickly corrected.
Well, this is just the horrific use of language. This is like when a player gets hurt and they say, he's out with a knee. It's like, I have a knee, should I be worried?
Oh my god, I've got two!
Yeah, I mean, you don't need government to fight these battles and win these battles for you, but you've been convinced you do, because they want you in this infantile state where they do everything for you.
Yes, absolutely. There's a something a coworker of mine, Matt, keeps pointing out incessantly to me because he's a libertarian. He's almost an anarchist, but he likes to point out when there are market solutions to problems that people think. And so, for instance, have you heard about this company called Chariot, which is an Uber but exclusively for women? It's women drivers picking up other women so that women don't have to be afraid to get in the cars with men.
Yeah, I did hear about that, yeah.
I have not heard about that. One, I find it offensive. Two, what if you're transgender?
Snap. Now, I also think it's a stupid product, but it is a market solution to a quote-unquote problem. We didn't have to have legislation. Yeah, we didn't have to have fucking Al Gore going, now you gotta separate the P from the D, otherwise there's gonna be fighting. Like, it's just happened in the market, and if it's a problem or not, whatever, and that it will fail or succeed based on the market, but the point is, no legislation needed.
This isn't a lesbian dating app.
I'm sure it could be used that way.
Also, how do they police this? Like, what if I sign up and give myself a female name and then they show up to pick me up? Do they just go, nope?
No, it's probably like Uber. They rate drivers or rate passengers probably, and then if
I assume they wouldn't pick you up if you looked like you do. I mean, clearly so masculine.
Voluntary exchange.
Is that a microaggression if I call this app and I'm not a woman?
I think that's a macro something or other. Maybe not aggression, but annoyance? Dicketry? Good transition, sir. So smooth. We're very professional.
Well, I didn't know we were going for a transition here. Are we finished with this story? Do you have anything else you want to say?
I've got nothing else I want to say. This is dumb. People, Bernie Sanders supporters, you should denounce this. Don't be idiots.
Bernie Sanders supporters not being idiots, then they wouldn't be Bernie Sanders supporters.
Oh, come on. Low blow.
I don't know, man. But that's a story for another time. What we should talk about, though, is more violence against women. What am I talking about? Find out in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. What I want to talk about in our review section here is the most recent episode of Arrow, unless you're listening to this on Thursday night. Oh no, it's not new this week, right, Elliot?
Yeah, I think it's a repeat this week.
Right, so this will be the most recent episode of Arrow for a few weeks that aired last Wednesday. It was the 18th episode of season 4 called 11:59. Is that a reference to 1 minute before midnight, Elliot?
It's a reference to a very significant event where the time was called for an official medical record.
Oh, I didn't pick that up. Good point. Yeah. I think that's also supposed to be a double thing with the right before midnight, 11:59, because things are about to go to hell in the season.
Yeah, I think it could be both. Arrow tries very, very hard, and I deeply appreciate that they really try to incorporate themes into their work, and it doesn't always work out as well as it could. In some cases, I think that they have their hits and they have their misses, but I think that I deeply appreciate the fact that they really do try to present a thematically coherent show, you know, and I appreciate that effort. So it wouldn't surprise me if 11:59 carries more than just the meaning of what happened in that one episode.
Right, and I think what you did just kind of summed up the series for me as a whole. There's hits, there's misses, but for me, this episode was a hit. So yes. I am gonna say spoilers.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
This episode basically revolved around Damien Dark breaking out of prison so he can go back to being a big bad, the big bad of the season, and he's the villain they're going to defeat at the end. Mm-hmm. And part of him breaking out was you have to really establish how awful the villain is. And this worked with the pledge for the season, which was somebody's going to die. One of the main cast members is going to die. Well, as Damien Dark's breaking out of prison, he stabs Laurel Lance, the Black Canary, and then she seems to be better, and then she randomly crashes on when she's in the hospital bed, and she dies. So that was sort of the big movement of the episode. But for me, I thought it was a very emotional episode after she was stabbed and then when she died. And it actually moved me. There are not many things I can watch that move me emotionally. Even though I'm in and out of Arrow emotionally a lot through the seasons, this episode got me. Especially the scene where Oliver comes into the hall and sees Laurel's dad, Captain Lance. The acting in that scene was phenomenal.
It's Paul Blackthorne, baby. He's just, so good. I cried.
Yeah, it was great. I was on the verge of tears because, you know, I'm a little straighter than Elliot, so that's obviously why. No, I obviously cry during stuff all the time. This one didn't get me. But the reason I'm talking about this and I want to give it its due is, again, the internet, as we talked about last week with The Walking Dead, we talked about previously with Batman vs. Superman, they have a problem with this show. If you go on IGN after this show airs, every comment is about how bad it is. And it's about how the show is just Oliver and Felicity and it's destroyed by them. And that's not true at all. It's missing completely what the show is. And there was an article actually on IGN with an interview with the producer, Mark Guggenheim, and some of the other actors and stuff about what happened. And I thought his comments about why they did what they did in their decision-making when killing Laurel was awesome, and it harkens back to Michael Bay's comment. So this is his quote. How divisive Laurel is as a character on Twitter, that's not a factor. Truth be told, also, Twitter is a very specific sub-segment. The number of people who don't like Laurel is probably an infinitesimally small group, so it's not, as they say, statistically relevant.
Boom. Burn.
Isn't this the same thing as the same 50 people? Isn't that just a different way of saying it?
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing is that, especially with a show like Arrow, you have a lot of people who they're very married to the comic book lore. And so they can't stand the fact that people like Guggenheim and Berlanti, the producers of Arrow and The Flash and Supergirl and the others, they can't stand the fact that they've taken the show and they're making their own story. It's their work. It's their art. They're telling their story the way that they want to, much like Zack Snyder tells his Superman story, his Batman story. And people, I don't understand the mentality of people who just want to see what they've seen before in a graphic novel and they just want to see it with moving actors delivering lines. That's not interesting to me. Tell me a new story. That's what they're doing here. And the people who are complaining about Laurel being killed off, like, they can't kill off the Black Canary. She's a DC character. She's a superhero, blah, blah. Well, in this universe, they're killing her off because it serves the theme of the overarching story, which is that Oliver is not the person that he was before he got marooned on the island. He has become a new person. Laurel dying in this episode signifies the last true connection that he has to the Oliver that he was before he was marooned. That's why they had that conversation in the hospital bed. It's important. It makes sense thematically that Laurel would die here because this is what's going to propel us into the remainder of the season and into the remainder of what Oliver's journey is going to be, which is he going to revert back to being the primitive man on the island, or is he going to take his step towards being a truly civilized man?
I think this is the one story you can out-analyze me on, Elliot, because you've clearly put much more thought into it than I have. So I want to tip my hat to you. I think that was an excellent analysis of the show and a great way of putting it. I hadn't quite thought of it that way, that Laurel's the last remaining connection. But not just a thematic standpoint, from a plot standpoint. It makes sense mechanically as yeah. well. And hasn't the Black Canary been killed off before on Arrow when it was her sister?
Yeah, she was just the canary. But yeah, I mean, essentially the same thing.
Right. So there's a certain symmetry in there as well in the storytelling. So I think when you look at the way this was actually executed, it was well done. But this is where I have a question for Daniel that I want to ask him about. When we start talking about Twitter being a subsection and all these people have this idea that there's an obligation on the writer's part, the creator's part, towards them. Daniel,
mm-hmm.
how can we get better statistics to know what percentage of the population is actually on the internet saying these things? And why do certain types of people get attracted to social media and the internet? These people who seem to think the creators are obligated to them. Why are they attracted to these platforms and voicing their opinions on these platforms?
Because they think their opinions are important and the world must know what their opinions are. And this platform gives them a way to very easily do that.
And it makes them, but that's the thing. It's not easy because they're all drowning each other out in the noise. So does it just make them feel like they're doing it? It's like a trick.
Yeah, it's the same gamification of communications that people get from like from self-esteem workouts of like video games, for instance. When you level up on World of Warcraft, that gives you a similar chemical boost that you get from also accomplishing something in reality. And so that's why people can, who especially have low self-esteem, can get really obsessed with leveling up in that game or in even in, especially in really stupid games like Candy Crush or yeah. or things like on your phone. Same mechanism at work works that way in communication as well.
That's
I
true.
I found it out to someone I have 100 followers. 100 people just theoretically saw what I just said. Yeah.
Interesting. And to back up what you just said, I just downloaded this bubble shooter app that I've been playing, and it's the same thing. Like it's literally a game. And it ranks people and everything. Honestly, to get to the top, you need to play so many games, like, constantly all day. And every time they have a new ranking release, it's the same, like, they reset them. And then you have to earn your way back up. But it's the same people near the top every time. So they literally just have to be sitting there on their phones all day playing.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Absolutely.
So you're saying necessarily the people with the perspective of, they owe me something, have some sort of low self-esteem, and that's what attracts them to this.
Yeah, they're very other-oriented in the first place, and so of course this kind of mechanism is where they get their self-esteem. I get to speak my opinion to 100 of my followers, and I got 3 retweets. Who knows how many people saw it? It could be in the high 200s.
So then what are the real, my first question then, what are the, based upon that, what are the real stats of these people? What percentage of the population are they actually? Is Mark Guggenheim correct when he says they're not statistically relevant? Is Michael Bay correct when he says it's the same 50 people?
So it's, they're both, they're onto something, but not, I mean, it's not entirely the case. It depends. This, the people saying these things could be a significant portion of your audience, and you just might have a really douchey audience, right? Doesn't leave that out. But two, the actual numbers are gonna be, When you think about, for instance, like when I do marketing and like I push out a video and 25,000 people watch it and we get 15 comments. But 25 people, we know that 25,000 people watched the video. Only a tiny, tiny fraction said something negative in the comments out of those 15. So what is the actual percentage here? So let's say 500,000 people watched that episode and 110 of them said something on Twitter. That literally is statistically nonsense. Why would you pay attention to that?
Right. So even when, you know, Batman versus Superman had that comment thread in the tens of thousands, that's statistically irrelevant because it's made and it's going, I mean, it's made 783 million at recording time, but it'll be at 800 million by the end of the week, most likely.
So right. Who you're going to listen right. to the 10,000 people. Let's say it's legitimately 10,000 people who said something negative online or nearly $800 million in sales.
Worldwide.
Yeah. Clearly, you're going to go with the money.
Right.
I don't think any exec in the world is going to go, well, I don't know, 9,837 people said bad things about Zack Snyder, so I guess we're going to have to replace him. That would be completely ignorant.
100 people said Felicity's ruining the show. I guess we should bring Laurel back and kill Felicity off.
Yeah, that was all gibberish, but yeah, whatever you said.
I want to add one more thing, because Justin...
Put a cap on this, LA, because I think you're better than I am at putting a cap on Arrow stuff.
Well, I just think that you had the twist spoiled to you on the internet before.
Yeah.
And thank you for not spoiling it for me, because I was...
I'm not a dick, dude.
I know, man, I know. But I mean, I was just floored by the episode, because it really did catch me off guard. I did not expect it to be Laurel. I think you and I had discussed, and we'd said that it was either going to be Captain Lance or it was going to be Felicity's mom.
I expected it to be Captain Lance, and I'm pleasantly surprised it isn't him.
Laurel, so it shocked me. But then when you told me that it had been spoiled for you, and you told me some of the comments that other people had made on a website, I forgot what article you were reading.
I read an article about how she's going, the Earth 2 version of her is going to appear on The Flash.
Something like that. And then they're like, oh, that's just to make up for them killing her off. I mean, I remember just being like, when you told me that, I'm like, how the fuck did they even know? How do they know? How do they know that Laurel was, like, the internet has become a place where, and I told you about what happened with The Force Awakens, where in a political thread, no discussion of Star Wars whatsoever, some dude just decided to be a dick and just spoil the twist for me. And I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that's like that meme that came out a long time ago that was somebody driving by a bookstore yelling, Snape kills Dumbledore.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, the internet has become a place where art can't just speak for itself anymore. We are now at a place where the quality of a work of art is now predetermined by a certain fraction of the population based on what other people have said about it. So people are going into the theater with preconceived notions, or they're turning on a television program with preconceived notions based on what has been spoiled on the internet to them and what other people's reviews and opinions before they ever actually sit down to be able to judge it on their own. Right. That's a very troublesome trend to me.
Right, and that's what happened with The Walking Dead last week too, where the way the episode was going to end was leaked. They leaked the last 11 minutes of audio of the episode. They leaked the final shot. So people decided before the episode aired what the reaction would be, and then that's become the story and the news since of what the reaction is.
And they've... Well, Batman versus Superman, same thing. I mean, right. The critics and the people on the internet, they were talking down the movie. And luckily, in that instance, the fans stood up to the critics and to these people on the internet. They went to see the movie themselves, and they came away completely illuminated, blown away by this film.
Right, but the concern is long-term here. That's my concern, is when this conversation becomes pervasive. So let's do a little bit then, and let's get our opinions out by talking about some trailers that came out this past week. So we're going to run through four really quickly. The first is released at the MTV Movie Awards was the new Suicide Squad trailer. Any opinions?
I see the appeal of this movie, and there's some... interesting moments in it. I don't think it quite hits on my taste in movies, or maybe it's my sense of life. Just not feeling this movie. Like, I give it some originality credit, even though it is a remake of a book or a comic book, but
I kind of agree, Daniel. Yeah, it's not quite my sense of life, but Zack Snyder is the executive producer of it, right?
Right.
So yeah. I may just go watch it to support him, but this doesn't feel like it's going to be necessarily my, like you said, it's not going to be my sense of life, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not super excited about it, especially because people are trying to tout this as like what Batman Superman should have been.
So
that kind of disappoints me, but I will see it for 3 reasons. 1, Zack Snyder's the executive producer. 2, Will Smith is in it, and I think it looks like a good role for him. And then 3, I'm interested to see what Margot Robbie does with the role of Harley Quinn. She's been pretty good in the trailers, and it could be a pretty iconic performance.
It looks interesting, but I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think that's a good summary of it, is I don't know.
I don't know.
Now the next one. When I was young, I remember there was an animated movie for this book, BFG. They released a trailer for this. For me, this trailer was completely underwhelming. It was like nothing happened in it. and it didn't even explore the world or anything. So I was just kind of like, what is the purpose of this trailer?
What is the purpose of it?
Yeah, purpose. Well, sorry.
Somebody watched such good...
Reason. Yeah, that's in my head now every time I say purpose.
I'll answer that.
I don't get it either. I know that a lot of people love this story, and there was also a musical or a play that went around the country that did very well. And maybe this was the trailer for them to get them excited, because I'm not familiar with this story at all. And so I was kind of lost as to what the heck was going on. Nothing particularly interesting. The animation looks good. I think that's a step.
I think it's supposed to be live action.
It's supposed to, there is live action mixed, but like the giant is animated.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's a teaser, right? Like it's kind of what it is. It's not really like a full trailer. Do you think so?
No, I mean, that's fair. It's more of a teaser, and I don't know. Maybe the trailer will get more into the story. I hope so. I might see this just because I like the mixture of live action and animation if it's done really, really well. And this movie at least looks artistically beautiful. So there is that.
I take it Elliot has no opinion.
Well, I'm not familiar with the story either, but I thought it looks gorgeous, like Daniel said. So I might just go see it just because I like to just watch beautiful things. That's why I watch football.
That's why you watch Rob Gronkowski, right?
Now this next one.
Go ahead.
Fuck off. I have no interest whatsoever.
What? Come on. Did you see Neighbors?
No, I had no interest in that either.
Oh, Neighbors is hilarious. I love Neighbors. So this is the trailer for Neighbors 2, which is the sequel. This is about Seth Rogen and his wife, Rose Byrne, trying to sell the house that was next to the fraternity. Except now when they try to sell it, a sorority moves in.
Oh, hilarity ensues.
So, of course, they bring Zac Efron back to figure out how to kick out the sorority. I'm excited about this because the writers, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and it's the same
you
cast.
You didn't have enough Zac Efron in your spank bank?
Dude, that dude keeps getting more and more ripped. If you want like a role model as to how I get more and more ripped, that dude like every time is more and more impressive. Dude,
seriously. Oh my god.
I don't know how he's doing it.
I don't know. Oh, he needs to keep doing it.
But I will say this about the trailer. In case you were disappointed in it, there were two performers missing from the trailer.
Dave Franco?
Yes. I was going to use that 1 second. But yes, Dave Franco is in this movie. He was the best part of the first one, so I'm glad they're bringing him back. I was disappointed when he was in the trailer. I immediately went to IMDb. It was like, oh, okay, phew, he's in this. And also, Selena Gomez is in this movie.
Is that supposed to motivate me to want to watch it more? I don't. What is your tactic here? To actually make me throw up? Is that your... what you're going for?
I have a challenge for you, Daniel. Are you ready?
Oh, is it the cinnamon challenge? Because I'd rather do that.
My challenge for you is watch Neighbors. That's my challenge.
Oh my god. There are so many things I could do with my life.
Yes. What you should do is watch Neighbors.
You know, there is a certain irony to all of this because I wish I was making this up. I really do wish I was making this up and lying to the audience right now. But I am literally wearing a Neighbor's shirt right now that I got for free. It is a t-shirt and has red Solo cups on it. I'll take a picture later and send it in.
Oh, so I gotta put that up too?
I got it for free from a beer festival that I was at. They were trying to encourage seeing this movie. And they're like, you want this t-shirt to see The Neighbors? I was like, yeah, I'll take the shirt. They're like, are you going to see the movie? I was like, no, fuck no. Looks
and I
terrible.
Remember we had this disagreement then, too.
Yep. Yep.
It's a funny movie. See it.
No.
We can get him to watch Doctor Who pre-Capaldi.
Oh, God. So much work.
All right,
so
well, I know effort. What he is going to watch. Let's talk about the next teaser trailer here. Finally, we've moved on. Because now that The Force Awakens has been released on Blu-ray, to which Birth Movies Death called it an awful disappointment of a Blu-ray. Fuck you. I'm not even a Star Wars fan and fuck you.
First of all, this Blu-ray was not even that blue. I was totally disappointed.
That's what that guy sounds like in my head. So they released the teaser trailer for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
Maybe walk us through this one, Daniel. And my first question is, are they naming it Rogue One, A Star Wars Story to differentiate it from the rest of the trilogy?
Yeah, some people are still confused. Like, I got a ton of Facebook stuff in my feed that was like, they're building another Death Star? Come on! Nope. This was the first one. This is the one they already built. To clarify for anyone out there who is confused, and I don't mean to make fun of you that much, but this is a story that takes place before A New Hope, before the first Death Star. This is the story
prequel
of how they got the plans to blow up the Death Star. You know, many Bothans died.
Those of you who think there are no plot holes in Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. So this is a teaser.
This is literally a plot hole so big you could put the Death Star in it.
Why is this a plot hole? What?
Because they have to make a whole movie to explain how it happened.
Well, they don't have to. It's just an interesting story.
I know. It's not really a plot hole. I'm being facetious. I'm making fun of the people who make up plot holes.
That everything is a plot hole?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, anything Rey that's totally non-essential to the theme is a plot hole.
Why did Rey look right there instead of left? That's totally... Why didn't they explain that?
How did John Galt amass the knowledge to make a static electricity generator?
Plot hole!
Austin and I talked about doing... like a prequel, I don't know if it was like a screenplay or a graphic novel or something, but Justin and I talked about doing something along the lines of like John Galt, like his backstory where he's going around picking people to go to the Gulch. Like that's going on in tandem with the novel Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, to harken back to what we talked about in the opening to the show, I had actually joked about making, what Elliot's talking about is, I had joked about making the Atlas Shrugged shared universe a long time ago, where you could have the prequel for Francisco, the prequel for Ragnar, the prequel for John Galt, and all of them end up running beside Atlas Shrugged, so you see the actions that are going on for these people before and during Atlas Shrugged.
That's the Avengers movies I want to see.
Yeah.
Right there, the ultimate Avengers.
Oh, Zack Snyder directs it, I'll totally go for it.
Imagine an alternate universe in which capitalism is loved, where there are giant posters of, like, Francisco in a cape, and it's like the Francisco D'Anconia movie coming this fall. Okay, anyway, that's a little nerdy. But this, the Rogue One thing is a teaser, so as Justin said, earlier on, it didn't make much fucking sense.
Yeah, I said that pre-show in our notes. I was like, this trailer made no sense to me. The first half, I was like, yeah, I'm on board. And then I was just like, yeah, I have no idea what's going on.
It is a teaser. It's just supposed to give you little snippets of what this universe looks like. And we get a lot of the old stuff. The old stormtroopers are in there. And we get a picture of young Mon Mothma, who becomes the leader of the New Republic. Not Leia, by the way. Mon Mothma. And it looks good. Forrest Whitaker's in it.
Oh, yeah. That's what I laughed about in the trailer. I was like, yeah, I'm on board. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. Yeah, that's Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah, it is, Forrest Whitaker.
I like Forrest Whitaker. You don't like Forrest Whitaker?
He's hit or miss with me. Sometimes he just doesn't seem like he's acting.
It's like he's just Forrest Whitaker?
Yes.
It's like he's living on the laurels that his name is Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, and he has a lazy eye.
Yes. There are two other things that weren't in this trailer, spoiler alert, that are going to get people excited, which is one that Mads Mikkelsen is in this movie, but we don't know what part he plays yet. Probably.
Doesn't matter.
Although he said in a British interview that he's not playing the bad guy, which is interesting.
What?
Yeah. Maybe he's just sort of, maybe he doesn't think of himself as the bad guy. I don't know how he does.
What happens when you play
guy.
Hannibal for 3 years? You get confused about good and evil.
And then two, and this is definitely a spoiler, so if you don't want to know anything about Rogue One, turn it off now.
Snake kills Dumbledore.
Yes. Is that Darth Vader is going to be in this movie. And James Earl Jones is going to play Darth Vader. But they didn't reveal that. I'm sure that's going to be their last trailer or something like that.
Like with Spider-Man?
Epic ending scene, yeah.
Is who's the main character? What's her name?
I don't remember her name.
Is she just going to be like, all right, I'm tired of this. Underoos! And then Darth Vader shows up?
Yes. I'm sure it's going to be something where it cuts to black and you hear... And then the red lights, everyone goes, and then it's like, a Rogue One, a Star Wars story. And then the fans go, oh my god, and jizz all over.
So is the Rogue One the girl? So it's like a pun of a title?
Yes. See how that works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like,
yeah. Also, by the way, this is going to cross over with the Star Wars TV show Rebels, which is an animated series.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's going to be a mixture here.
And isn't there a rumor they're also going to have Han Solo in it? Young Han Solo?
There's a rumor. Unsubstantiated, but that there is a rumor. So.
Shared universe.
Well, literally, yes, since it is. By definition. It is an epic story, yes.
All right, let's bust through some news stories here. You ready?
Busting through.
All right. First one is in here for Daniel's sake here. Adam Carolla is going to host a live talk show on Spike.
Oh, my God. I don't know how much more Adam Carolla content I can consume on a daily basis, but I'm going to try.
Really? You're going to watch this? Isn't it just about construction?
Yeah, but I watched his show To Catch a Contractor, which was about construction.
Did
it
you?
Was really awesome. Yeah.
Oh.
It was very funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess there's your endorsement from Daniel. I only listen to the podcast.
I honestly think Adam Carolla is among the top five most talented comedians alive today. There is not a single human being who produces the amount of content that Adam Carolla produces on a weekly basis and is consistently funny doing it.
Yeah, he is very entertaining.
Because it's all unscripted. It's all improv, which is just incredible to me. So, I'm excited. I think he's going to do good things with this. And Spike loves him. They just love the shit out of him.
Yeah, because he's manly.
Yes. Oh, man, revival of the Man Show. Yeah. Hosted by Dave Franco and Zac Efron.
I'm in.
Justin's in with a box of Kleenex and a bottle of lotion.
Hey. No.
There ain't enough Jergens in the world.
Selena Gomez on trampolines.
All right, moving on.
Speaking of references to The Neighbors, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are up to something else. So at the end of May, they're releasing Preacher, which is an adaptation of the comic, and that's going to be on AMC. But now they're developing another comic book adaptation for television. And the question I have for you guys is this related at all to the success of Batman vs. Superman? So this is for Cinemax. It's called The Boys, and it's about a squad of people who basically take out superhero threats. So superheroes that become a threat. These people go around and they basically clean up and take care of them.
You know what was the biggest revelation in this story for me? Is that Cinemax still exists.
So how else do people watch softcore porn at night, Daniel?
So this is like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. but with an all-male cast, is that the idea?
Yeah. With a proper cast, you mean.
Mm-hmm.
No Asians and no women.
Oh, yeah. So Ming-Na Wang comes to beat you up.
I
yeah, that's true. It's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. without the best part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
With a really dark sense of humor, I think I could get behind this show. At least conceptually.
Yeah.
Like, but it would have to be Seth Rogen dark humor.
So these guys, when they're not fighting superheroes, they're just smoking weed? Is that what you're saying?
No! No, see, there is Seth Rogen dark humor and there is Seth Rogen stoner humor. I don't want Seth Rogen stoner humor, which is why I don't watch The Neighbors.
So what would be Seth Rogen dark humor? Give me an example.
Like, Knocked Up.
That's Judd Apatow.
Yeah, but it's Seth Rogen. What I mean is his portrayal of it.
Oh, okay.
When he plays the sort of stoner loser character, I'm not interested. When he plays a sort of twisted, darker character, I'm interested.
I think that's fair. So we'll see how much humor they bring into this. It could be interesting. It could not be. At some point, we're going to oversaturate the market here with comic book stuff, I would think.
What?
All right. Game of Thrones is almost back. So there are a lot of interviews going around promoting the show because obviously that's how they get hype going. Not like, is Jon Snow dead or not? He's not dead. They're going to bring him back or something.
I forget you watch this show.
Yeah, I watch it for Khaleesi, basically, and also Tyrion. That's pretty much it. Again, production value, tremendous. Character work, tremendous. It's just naturalistic. But the women promoting the show had a couple interesting quotes that I want to get your guys' perspective on because it deals with the gender issues we always talk about. So the first is by Emilia Clarke, who plays the aforementioned Khaleesi, Daenerys Targaryen, and she did an interview with Glamour, where Glamour asked her, if you were writing some of Game of Thrones fan fiction, what storyline would you like to see unfold? Her answer? I want to see Daenerys and her three dragons share the throne, eat goat they've barbecued, and bring back all the pretty boys, get them to take their trousers down and be like, I'm now the queen of everything. I'd like close-ups of all the boys' penises, please.
So I would, too. I would, too.
So this is a question I have for you.
How can you get on the show?
This is a fourfold question. Is this good, her saying this? Is it bad, her saying this? Is this just making fun of, as South Park did, George R. R. Martin's writing style? Wiener, 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 wiener. Or is this a snide British joke about fan fiction?
I have no idea. I mean, I think it's kind of funny. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't know what these characters do or are. I just know that it's basically murder and porn. And I can see both of those on YouTube, if I so choose. So I don't care. I mean, I think from what I know about the show, she's just sort of playing up the inverse of what happens to all the women, right?
Yes.
So it's fine. It's shocking. It's going to get people to hear the name Game of Thrones. So,
but isn't it good that a woman is admitting that she loves penis?
Is that how far we've fallen as a society, that when a woman gets excited and says she actually likes the D, that we have to point it out in a news story?
Yes. I don't know about you, but feminism, when I was growing up, said that women don't like penises. That women have beautiful anatomy and men don't.
Okay.
All right, I think it's a win, all right?
Fourfold win.
All right, so another female in the show, Maisie Williams, who's also playing a woman who, you know, she plays a young girl who's sort of going against the gender role and learning how to fight and being independent. We also know Maisie Williams Elliot from Doctor Who, right?
Yep.
She became immortal on Doctor Who. She also gave a quote about gender issues. In an interview with apparently Entertainment Weekly, she said, but I also feel like we should stop calling feminists feminists and just started calling people who aren't feminist sexist.
Triggered.
And then everyone else is just a human. You're either a normal person or a sexist. People get a label when they're bad because it works the other way as well. A lot of men have it hard too. Yeah, we do. Giggity. That's what the close-up shot's for. So do you agree with this quote or disagree with this quote?
Gonna need a wider angle lens, George. Do I agree with the quote? I like the sentiment of the quote. I won't pick apart the semantics or the context, but I like sort of the what she's feeling, I think.
Yeah, she's an actress, right? So it's more an expression of feeling than it is any sort of philosophical point. And I think her feeling in this respect is healthy. It's the idea that why are we coming up with all of these labels and doing all this bullshit like microaggressions and everything? Why don't we just, like, exist as normal, healthy people and then worry about the bad outlying behavior rather than defining all behavior as bad and outlying?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I got from it, too. You know, save the racist label and the sexist label for people who actually are those things. Don't assume by default that everybody you meet is a sexist, which is very much the opposite of what a lot of feminists would advocate nowadays.
Yeah. So, sentiment, woo! Exact phrasing. Yeah, she's an actress.
But she's like a 14-year-old actress, so.
No. So that thing earlier about the penis stuff, very inappropriate.
No. These are two different women.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The first one plays a 16-year-old, but she's over 20, so it's fine.
Oh, that's an ethical line right there. That's an interesting conundrum question.
Well, for office, Daniel.
They showed her having sex in season one when she was playing like a 16-year-old, so.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Okay.
Moving on to other ethical conundrums. That's what the internet's for. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA Glow, Steam Rocks, got risk for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. What is a completely normal word that you are starting to hate because of the way people use it?
I think one of them is epic. Yep. Everything is epic nowadays.
That's been undermined.
Oh my god, did you see that cupcake? It was epic. No, there's no way a cupcake was fucking epic.
So you mean when I hear that my penis is epic, it doesn't mean anything?
She didn't say epidemic.
I thought she meant endemic when she was saying epidemic.
I see. So epic is one of them. How about you guys?
A similar vein for me is cool. Cool has lost all meaning. It used to actually describe a certain type of personality and a certain type of person. Now it's just anything that's socially acceptable is cool. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Cool means it's okay.
Yeah. Which is the complete opposite of what cool originally meant.
Cool, man. It's totally rad. That's the bee's knees. It's the cat's meow. Stop.
Elliot? The word literally.
Yeah.
When people misuse it, that it just grinds my gears.
Yeah, that's true. I have one that's not a word, but it's a phraseology. I think it's one we mentioned last week or the week before, which is when noun is used as verb, meaning, oh, that cat totally forgot how to cat when it fell over off the table.
Yeah.
Or, I adulted earlier today.
Yeah.
Because I paid my taxes. Oh, stop it.
Yeah, we talked about adulted because it's like, so you mean you normaled.
Yes.
Oh, I totally existed this morning when I paid my taxes.
Oh, I couldn't. Oh, I just can't stand it. Yes. This ice cream fell off the cone. It totally forgot how to ice cream. What the fuck?
Yeah. I just hate how now, because of the internet, things just get repeated over and over again. Like, Netflix and chill. Shut the fuck up. And Savage is the new one. Everything is Savage.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind that one. I think it's kind of funny. But Bay. But these aren't real words. The other one.
Yeah, but savage is a real word, and it means like someone who's not civilized.
It's true. We could, and ironically, not allowed to use it in that way. Not allowed to use that word for what it actually means. Also, gay, turns out, not allowed to use that word for what it actually means anymore either. But, oh, and the one other one, which is more of a combination of words and images, is I'm actually fairly done with like there's a picture and above the picture it's like when bae be like, and then a picture of something that explains what bae be like.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, well, that whole phraseology when you're sitting in class and the teacher says, it's like, I'm done with this phraseology. We can be over this now.
Yeah, there's a whole series of memes like that. Like that feeling when.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what are you gonna fucking put a picture of your feeling there for? Like.
I mean, it's gonna go on forever, but I'm already sort of done with it.
Some of them are genuinely funny. It's just that there's so much of them that, you just get tired of them.
Well, yeah. Right, and that's something I've expressed before on this show, and it's relevant to what we were saying about the same 50 people and the not statistically relevant. It's the idea that whenever anything happens, everyone runs to the internet to make the joke before everyone else, and everyone tries to say the funny thing on the internet.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, by the way, looking a little off topic here, but back to the same 50 people and statistically irrelevant stuff. I'm watching documentaries on Netflix that CNN produced called The 60s, which is basically just filling in all of my historical knowledge that I did not get in school about what happened in the goddamn 60s. But one of the things is, like, today on the internet, if 100 people complain about something, like, and there's no change, we get enraged. It's like, but 100 of us got together and wrote a comment on Pepsi's wall to take down their ad because it's sexist. Mm. Over 1 million African Americans physically went to Washington D.C. to ask for rights.
Hashtag first world problem.
From all across the country, they got on buses and boats and in airplanes, and they physically went somewhere to demand something. The fact that 100 of you signed a petition at change.org means diddly shit.
Imagine if, would that have happened if the internet existed, or would they have just tweeted Black Lives Matter?
But, do you guys remember when the Tea Party rallies started happening? And there were a lot of people at those rallies too. That didn't amount to anything either, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a couple hundred thousand, maybe 400,000-ish people, which is still a lot of people. Don't get me wrong, especially nowadays. Getting 400,000 people to do anything except watch the goddamn Super Bowl is hard. But yeah, I just couldn't, I was watching that and I thought, not in the era of the internet. Nope, it would just be hashtag have a dream or something. And that's as far as it would have gone.
Hashtag I have a dream.
I have a dream, and then it would be something stupid. I have a dream that I'll drive the new Mercedes coupe. Hashtag. Something like that. It would be something that stupid.
I have a dream where, in a modern context, it's I have a dream that whites and blacks can have their own safe spaces.
Separate but equal safe spaces?
Yeah, indeed. Well, the white one would be a little bit less nice, but yeah, you get my point.
All right, let's move on to more internet ponderings with our second Reddit here. This is a shower thought. I wonder how many times I've crossed paths in real life with people I've had discussions with on Reddit.
People who discuss things on Reddit go outside?
I think that's the first comment, isn't it? That no, none, because none of us go outside.
Oh, I don't actually read these.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
I mean, here's the thing. Doesn't that say something about the internet if you could cross paths with people that you've had discussions with and not even know it? Doesn't that reveal a problem with it?
It certainly reveals something that's either non-ideal or something that I would like to change. I'm not sure it's necessarily a quote-unquote problem, but... I mean, I wish the culture of the internet was much more, this is the thing tied to me and I'm perfectly...
Yes.
Proud of what I've said and what I have done.
Preach. Hashtag I mean, have a dream.
Right. This is why every single one of my internet handles is Daniel T. Richards.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to know it is me and I have said this thing.
Yes.
I'm not hiding behind shit.
This is what I've said, and some tech genius out there can steal my idea. I think the next wave of this stuff is video.
You mean like YouTube, except that's been invented.
No. I mean, like, when you're talking about how Facebook's tried to make it so you can have a video as your profile picture now.
Oh. Still lost. Keep going.
That's it. This is why I'm poor.
Folks, you heard it here first. Video is the next big thing. And pretty soon, video.
Is that like carrots? Something.
No, I'm just talking
and then
about...
after that, video in full color, Spectravision.
No, I'm talking about making it so people are very, like, you like it becomes normalized that all of these things are video and you verify and everything through video. None of this allowing people to hide anymore and not use their real identities.
It's like when you make an internet comment, it's a video of you making an internet comment.
Yes.
I see. Okay,
yes.
That's a little more clear.
Yeah, everything is video.
Oh,
like
God.
When you swipe left and it's a new Tinder, it's somebody being like, hi, I'm so-and-so, and you're like, left.
Pretty soon we'll get in the talkies, see, and things will be great. We'll have a new era, see?
Why would you have shoes because your videos can talk?
What?
No, wait, never mind. All right, next Reddit. Here's a mildly interesting for you guys, and I'm not going to be posting this picture. You can click through to the fucking link to see the picture. It's, I really want to know what's behind the door. And what it is it's like a very small wall with a door on it. So it looks like if the door were to open, there would basically only be a wall behind it.
It would open to the other side of the wall.
Right.
Yes. This is outside, by the way, so it's just like a stone cinder block wall that happens to have a door on it.
Just click on the fucking link.
Go to themidside.com.
Yeah.
/ podcast. Seriously, Justin, I think we are all mildly interested out.
Never. What's behind the door, Daniel? What's behind the door?
No. Another door? Is that the objectively correct answer?
The worst part is I didn't even think of that.
Come on, people. You guys have seen Monsters, Inc. We all know what's behind that door.
No, he's right. The objectively correct answer is another door.
Thank you. And thank you, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Yes.
All right. I think that sums it up. Let's wrap up this episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that I basically have zero interest in Seth Rogen unless he plays someone mildly dark. If he at all looks like he has at one time or ever has smoked marijuana or is currently smoking marijuana, I want nothing to do with him in any way. Even if he is co-starring with Zac Efron's pecs.
And abs. Elliot?
I learned that college students are so dumb, they cannot tell a man of the cloth from a man of a clan.
Yeah, come on. You got to be able to tell your men apart. Ask Elliot.
Seriously.
That is a serious dating skill, I think, to tell the difference between a clansman and a priest. Although I'm not sure which one you're going after.
Depends what you're into that night, I suppose.
You know, yeah. There's fetishes for everybody. We don't need to get into it.
Justin, what'd you learn this week?
I'm actually going to say a non-podcast thing that I learned this week.
What?
So, you know how on the Weather Channel they'll do like how much rain there's going to be, how much precipitation, and they do those maps that show the different colors?
Yes.
And that's commonly called a heat map. Okay. That's not what it's actually called. It's actually called a choropleth map. Choropleth.
I love that he spelled it out.
Because I probably pronounced it wrong.
Yeah, it's Hispanic. It's a choropleth map. choropleth. Stop appropriating my culture, Justin.
My name is Daniel, and I drive my tiny bicicleta to school.
It's chorople. Yes.
I just thought that was interesting. You know, we're talking about words and, you know, people not using them correctly. We don't even use the right fucking terms for things. So, educate yourself.
We literally don't use the right terms for things. Yes.
Cool by me. Savage.
Sweet. Well, if you learned something this week, I think you should tell a friend. I think that's going to be our action of the week this week. Dun, 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 is tell a friend. What we really rely on here at the Midside is to create more Midsiders. That's right. We coined a term this week because we don't have insiders like the Washington Beltway nonsense people. We have Midsiders. You're not outside. You're not inside. You're in the Midside. See what we did there? Pretty fucking clever. So if you'd like to create more.
To be fair,
you
just took the clever thing I did and made it better.
Cleverer? Yes. Yeah. That's what I do.
Not really.
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Nothing.
So we'd like to make more of you, and since you're not going to like literally reproduce, like get together and have midside babies.
That's probably because most of you are gay.
A good 63% of you are homosexual.
That's true.
We know that. That's perfectly fine. We are totally accepting of that, but you're never going to have little midsider babies.
What's the term? We track well in the gay community?
Track well.
What's the term when you do well in a certain demographic? It's track, isn't it? We track well in that demo.
You whore yourself out well to a certain demographic? Is that what we're...
Well, I mean, William is visiting Elliot.
No!
Yeah, but
there's
no whoring going on there. He's way too busy.
Too bad. So, why don't you tell a friend about us? Why don't you tell a coworker? Why don't you tell, like, a homeless guy that you pass every day to work when he's like, change? And you're like, yeah, this will change your life. And
tell the homeless
guy. Midside.
The homeless guy.
On the street with their trench coats.
That's right. And you can tell them by having them go to themidside.com/podcast, or they can go to Podbean and find us over on Podbean, or you can go to twitter.com/themidside.
And Stitcher, and of course, we're now on Stitcher.
Stitcher. And God, we're also Liberty.me.
Yep.
Love the Liberty.me listeners.
Yep. If you go to Liberty.me and you go to their studio page, you'll find all their recent podcasts. We're among that great list of shows. Check us and other shows out there.
We are taking over, man. That's awesome.
We're like fucking cats on the internet. We're like everywhere now.
I'm just waiting to join the pirate ship.
We're the next big thing. It's basically porn, cats, midget porn, and then us. On the internet, we're top four, I think.
Don't I qualify as midget porn, though?
Yeah, if you start sending out those dick pics. So, and of course, we would be remiss if we didn't say thank you sincerely to our Patreon patrons. Patreon.com/themidside allows you to sign up to give a few shekels here and there for the content we produce. It helps us keep the lights on.
Oh, I also want to plug. I want to plug. Buy the Snyder t-shirt. We're not going to make any money off of it. I just want people to wear the t-shirt because it's awesome.
Wouldn't our audience appreciate if we made money off of it? They'd be more likely to buy it if it wasn't a charity.
Yeah, I'm actually starting to wonder if that would be the case. I just wanted to buy it myself for as cheap as possible. We had a debate. And then finally I found a cheap one. So you guys are all reaping the benefits of it.
This Justin was like, here's this t-shirt site. It's going to cost you a mere $73 for this alpaca fur diamond encrusted t-shirt.
Hey, like, no expense will be spared for hailing Snyder.
So yeah, we have a Hail Snyder t-shirt, which you can check out on Facebook or on the website. So thanks so much. Tell a friend, subscribe, iTunes, 5 stars. We love you. Bye.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there. And remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!